Today at Reader's Corner, Kati Martin, author of True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy. I'm Bob Kustrow. Welcome to Reader's Corner. What does it take for someone with seemingly every advantage in life to turn on their friends, their family, and their country, all in the name of a cause? Today's guest, Kati Martin, explores that question in her book, True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy. True Believer is the amazing true story of an American named Noel Field, who spied for the Soviet Union during the 1930s and 40s. Ultimately, Field was kidnapped and tortured by the KGB and forced to testify against his own communist comrades. His family, including his wife, his brother, and an adopted daughter, also were imprisoned behind the Iron Curtain when they went to search for him. The story Ms. Martin tells is filled with danger, misplaced loyalties, and betrayal. Today, we're featuring an encore edition of our interview with Kati Martin. She is the author of several books, including Enemies of the People, My Family's Journey to America, which was a finalist for the National Book Critics Circle Award, and she is a former correspondent for NPR and ABC News. Ms. Martin is a featured speaker at this year's Sun Valley Writers Conference, which begins next Friday. The conference is sold out, but there is free lawn seating for several presentations at the Sun Valley Pavilion. Details and tickets are online at svwc.com. Ms. Martin joins us today by phone from New York City for this interview. Kati Martin, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Thank you, Bob, and please don't call me Ms. Martin. getting old fast enough, but thanks for having me on.
Great. Well, Kati, let's start with just a brief description or bio of Field. This is a guy who was a pretty privileged guy, at least from an education standpoint, a Harvard man.
From every standpoint, Bob, this guy was third-generation Harvard grad. He, you know, an old New England family, and raised with everything a young man could hope for, and landed his dream job in the State Department in the 30s, and was talent scouted by Moscow as a man who could be turned. And why would such a man be potentially a Soviet agent? Well, because the recruiters, who were very smart KGB agents, picked out that he was alienated from his own country. His own country in those days, in the late 20s, early 30s, was pretty much dysfunctional. 11 million unemployed, rampant racism, a very divided country. Sound familiar? It should, because the parallels between the 30s and now are manifold and kind of scary.
You describe a single childhood event in Field's life that changed him. Tell us about that.
Right. Well, his father, whom he hugely admired, Harvard-trained biologist who'd set up a lab institute in Switzerland, took the young Noel Field to the still fresh battlefields of World War I, the Marne and Verdun, and pointed to this vast sea of graves and said, "Don't let this happen again, Noel." And the young man took that very much to heart and became an early pacifist student leader against war. And tragically, his father, whom he worshipped, died very suddenly. And I think that the father might have played a moderating role on the young man's zeal to you know, make the world a better place, which, by the way, is a noble goal. But one of the takeaways of True Believer is that it isn't enough to want to do good in the world. You also have to have judgment. And that Noel Field lacked, and that was very much to Moscow's benefit in the end.
So when he leaves Harvard, he winds up at the State Department. What does he do at the State Department, and then how long does it take him before he succumbs to the pressure of Russian spyhood?
Well, not that long, because the young man is alienated from his country, and the alienation grows in step with current events. The big event of that really was the hinge in Oldfield's conversion was the execution of Sacco and Vanzetti, a very famous case of two immigrants who were caught in a bank holdup and sent to the electric chair. And there was a lot of anti-immigrant and anti-ethnic racism at play in their execution. And for an idealistic young man like my hero, or I should say anti-hero, this was a demonstration that this cold capitalist country was beyond saving. And therefore, it wasn't enough just to change parties from, in those days, the Republicans were in power under Hoover to FDR, who came in 1933. But by the time FDR came to Washington and really shook things up and therefore avoided potentially a revolution, Noel Field and his ilk, because he was not alone, Bob, in being tempted by the siren song of communism, which promised easy and quick fixes to everything. Others were too, but what made Noel Field really significant historically, lucky for me, because he'd been overlooked by other historians, but I think you'll agree that he is a historically significant character, was that he stuck to his faith throughout his life, whereas others of his generation, left-leaning, once they saw the huge gap between the promise of communism and the reality of Stalinism, they saw the light and didn't actually sign on to work for Stalin. But if I can just bring the present in for a moment, I did not, when I first started working on this book, I could not have predicted how timely it would be, because of course now too we are caught up in the possibility that Moscow is manipulating events in our country. And this is a clear case of a historic precedent for Moscow, for Stalin in those days, for his long reach and the KGB's long reach. And, you know, let's not lose sight of the fact that Vladimir Putin is a KGB man.
Exactly. And you also point out somewhere in your book, or at least critics who have read your book have pointed out, that there's certainly an analogy here when it comes to ISIS and the role it plays in recruiting young people and how they lose all perspective but the one cause. And I mean, in a sense, that's what happened to this guy, Noel Field.
Yes. It's both of those. It's an illustration of how Russia was not in those days our friend and is not now our friend. And the power of an idea, be it Islamic extremism, jihadism, or hardcore Stalinism, the power of such an idea, if you capture someone at a young and impressionable age and before reality strikes, and sometimes it's the least likely people who can be so dangerous to us because they are chosen. And, you know, Noel Field didn't sign up to be a spy for Stalin. They came to him. They rang his doorbell because he'd been observed as a malcontent and as somebody who marched with protesters when others in the State Department did not. And as I say, he's a complicated character, which makes it, of course, much more fun to write such a story, and hopefully for the readers more interesting too, because he was a genuine do-gooder, but a do-gooder who made a series of terrible life choices which had huge repercussions for himself, for his family, and for the country that he betrayed, the United States.
You're listening to Reader's Corner, and I'm talking today with Cottie Martin, author of True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy. One of the other incidents in his life that seemed to have affected his view of America and turned him toward Russia, and the reason I bring this up is because it's one of the things that surprised me about the book. Just when I thought I knew everything there was to know about General Douglas MacArthur's job in this country in those at that time, I did not know his connection to Hoovervilles, of all things. Tell us about that.
Yes. Well, this is the Depression, 11 million unemployed and living in so-called Hoovervilles, named after the sitting president. You know, ramshackle, sort of jerry-built houses that lined the parks and in New York City along the Hudson River, et cetera, and just a real blot on our nation's inability to look after these 11 million people. And it was MacArthur who really basically led a troop of horseback cavalry to destroy these Hoovervilles, set fire to them. A young colonel named Dwight D. Eisenhower was ordered to proceed with the destruction of these Hoovervilles. And of course, this sent these poor people who had nowhere to go into the streets of Washington, many of them World War I veterans. And there's Noel Field, who observes this cruelty, and what he knows about the Russian experiment is all through Stalin's propaganda. Stalin and Lenin before him really kind of invented political spin and presented it, this glowing image of an egalitarian society that people like Field just consumed and were ready to work for in their own country. And I have to add quickly that this is before FDR came in with the New Deal and, of course, energized the country and gave it hope again. But by then, Field was working from his desk in the State Department, stealing documents and reporting on his colleagues at the State Department on what Moscow really wanted to know was how the U.S. was preparing for to combat the rise of fascism in Europe. And the answer to that is not really preparing at all.
Mm-hmm. And I think you pointed out that it was pretty easy for a young person like Noel Field to engage with the Communist Party in America in the 1930s because that wasn't exactly our focus then. Russia wasn't exactly our focus.
No, everything was geared toward Hitler and fighting the Nazis. And when President Roosevelt was presented with a list of communists in the State Department, in the Treasury, in the White House, he dismissed it, as did J. Edgar Hoover. Now, by the time Hoover started his anti-communist witch hunt in the 40s, there were very few witches left. So, indeed, it was a shameful episode in our country to go after so many innocent people. But in the 30s, there were plenty of witches in the highest reaches of the government. And the KGB really did a top-notch job of penetrating the highest offices in our government, and did so by recruiting people like Field who didn't look the part. They were well-educated, well-bred. You know, they were quote-unquote one of us in the eyes of official Washington. How could such a well-spoken young man, Harvard-educated, from a quote-unquote good family, betray his country? So he was precisely chosen for that role.
So in the meantime, he and his wife, Herta, come in contact with a young woman, Erica Wallach, I think her name is pronounced.
Yes.
Could you explain how this all happens? And,
yes.
And of course, she becomes a part of the family and her fate as well.
Yes, her fate was tragic as well, because Noel Field, pretty much everybody who came in contact with him, cursed the day they did. But Erica is really the heroine of True Believer. I was so happy to find,
sure,
you know, a character that I could really fall in love with. writing a book is kind of like a marriage. You've got, you know, you live with it night and day.
Right.
And I did not fall in love with Noel Field, but I sure fell for Erica, who is the kind of character that you generally only find in fiction. Noel and his wife met her as a teenager during the Spanish Civil War, which is another big event in this book. The Spanish Civil War, I won't take up our time with big explanation of why it was so important, but it was, suffice to say that in Spain, the Western world, including the U.S., had the first opportunity to do something other than talk about the dangers of, mm-hmm. of fascism, and chose not to. But thousands of Americans volunteered and went over there to support the anti-fascist forces, Noel Field among them. He meets this couple from Germany who are no longer able to look after their daughter, Erica, and Noel and his wife adopt her, and Noel has high hopes for Erica as a future communist. She's super bright, very attractive, engaging young woman, and her fate is tied up with his once he is kidnapped by Stalin. By the way, Stalin had no affection or loyalty toward those who served him with the utmost loyalty. I think you'll agree that True Believer demonstrates just how ruthless a dictator Stalin was, even toward his own people. So he has Noel Field kidnapped because he needs Noel Field to confess to being a CIA agent. This is where it becomes kind of a John le Carré plot twist.
No kidding.
So Noel Field is tortured into confessing he's actually working for the CIA, which he's not. But under torture, people will say any damn thing to make it stop. And he names over 500 names of people whom he recruited to the CIA. All false. But those people all end up, if not executed, then with long prison terms. Many of them executed, and so he is now Noel Field, having done his service to the cause, quote unquote. He is dispatched to a horrible prison, a maximum security prison in Budapest, where, by the way, he meets my parents, who are also prisoners there, because my mother and father were the last independent journalists behind the Iron Curtain. My father was AP when I was a small child growing up in Budapest in the 50s. And so they're arrested, and this is too bizarre, but for a period, my father's in the same cell as Noel Field, and in fact, they have the same interrogator, and that, Bob, is how I came
to
the story.
I assume so. And not at the same time. It's just that your father got into the cell after he left, right?
Correct. And then once Stalin dies, and now it's Khrushchev making nice to Eisenhower, and these prisoners are released, including Erica, Noel Field's adopted daughter, who had been arrested because she, like a good person, went looking for her stepfather after his kidnapping, and walked right into a trap, and was sent to the Gulag Archipelago for 5 years. So she's released. Noel Field is released, as is his brother, who also went looking for him and was sentenced to prison in Poland. At any rate, one of the conditions of Noel and Herta's release was that they never talked to Western media, because, of course, they were crushed in body and soul after this horrible imprisonment and torture. But my mother and father were the only reporters to ever find them and do an interview, and I benefited from the notes from that interview of many, many years ago. So there was, in addition to this being a great and missing chapter from Cold War history, there's also a personal connection.
As I was reading the book through those many years that he spied for Russia, and he's working for the State Department. Was he compensated, or how was he compensated by Russia?
Not at all. This is pure conviction. I don't know if that makes it better or worse.
Really? But,
yeah, because he spied for Moscow because he believed in Moscow, and even after being so brutalized and convicted for crimes he did not commit by the Soviets, he came out still a true believer and still convinced that it was just the mistakes of a few, the excess of a few people, that spoiled a system which he considered the salvation of the world. And he never came back to his own country. And, you know, he has surviving family members who were very helpful to me in my big search for documents, because I try to, tell the human story, too. So they provided the letters that form a big part of this book, the letters that went back and forth between the family members who simply couldn't believe that one of their own could be a spy. And I think just now reading my book is the first time that they've really, well, frankly, that they really believe that he was who I say he was, because it's pretty much undeniable when you read it.
This is Bob Custer, and I'm speaking with Cottie Martin about her new book, True Believer, which tells the true story of a Harvard-educated Quaker who became a Soviet spy. How did he live out those remaining days in Hungary?
Well, he was given a pretty good job as a literary editor, translating Hungarian to English, and very well treated. But he was physically broken, and died in his 60s, but a man of belief and faith in an absolutely poisonous system, and a man who really now enters the history books as one of the most complex and I think intriguing spies in our history.
Meanwhile, his brother, who I think, if I'm not mistaken, might have been a true believer earlier in his life?
He was what? Herman was a fellow traveler, I would say.
There you go. He winds up as this really respectable guy, I believe, a professor someplace.
Yes, at Tufts University in Boston. He rebuilt his life beautifully and is one of our early environmentalists, city planner, environmentalists. And never, you know, part of the tragedy of this story is the tragedy of the American family that never gave up on this black sheep. In fact, in one of his letters from Noel to Herman, his younger brother, he says, every family has a black sheep. In your case, or in our case, it's a red sheep.
Boy, I guess. So let's get back to Erica for a moment, and I'd like you to tell us, you said it so well, she was the heroine of your story, and what a brave and courageous soul she was, especially in captivity and what she had to go through. And then you might also conclude, of course, with where she winds up, which is a much more positive ending than our friend Noel Field.
Well, yes. So Erica turns her prison experience, mind you, she's very young, but she's just right before her abduction by the Russians, she meets an American GI in Germany, and they fall in love, and they rapidly have two infants, one after the other. She turns the infants over to her husband, named Bob, and goes off looking for her stepdad. 5 years later, she is freed, but she's stuck in Germany because by now the U.S. is in the throes of McCarthyism and post-McCarthyism, and Hoover is now still hunting for witches, of which there aren't many, and keeps her out of America as a potential security risk. So the U.S. doesn't come off completely pure in my depiction of the Cold War. We had our own version of this paranoid state. Ultimately, the thing about the U.S. is that we correct our excess, hopefully. But she had to wait for 2 years before she was given a visa to rejoin her family. And her kids were very helpful to me in piecing her story together. And she became a very popular school teacher in Virginia and lived a wonderful and full life as a teacher and a beloved member of the community there. And I had a great time, you know, finding people to talk about. Erica, she also died way too young. She died at age 71, but people still talk about her a decade after her death. So a very positive character. Her one regret, Bob, was that she refused to visit her stepfather in Hungary, even when he was asking for her on his deathbed. And she regretted that, although God knows she had reason to be angry with him for robbing her of 5 years of freedom.
Meanwhile, on his deathbed, he regretted nothing, did he?
Nope. And asked that at his funeral, the hymn to the International Communist Movement be sung, and the people who attended that funeral, which, by the way, was with full military honors, buried as a hero of the Russian Revolution in Budapest. But the people who attended told me that that nobody remembered the words to the Internationale any longer, and so they mumbled in an embarrassed fashion along with the music. So that gives you an idea that even in, this was still during communist days in Hungary, people had long since ceased to believe in the faith.
You know, a year or so ago, I guess it was just last year, we had a review of The Billion-Dollar Spy, and once again saw close up just how many lives were lost in this business of spying, both whether you were an American or a Russian, but certainly on the cause of democracy,
yes.
So many people lost their lives, and your own family was intricately involved in all of this. And now you write this book prior to Trump getting elected,
yep. And
prior to our learning so much about his ties with Russia, and now what's likely to be the Secretary of State and his ties with Russia. This book has to take on a whole new turn for you when it comes to what kind of questions you're going to get from folks on tying your book in the past to what's going on today.
I'm already getting those questions, and I'm already getting credit for having such foresight, which I cannot claim to have had. But it is an astonishing set of developments with Trump and his close ties to Putin, and his unfortunate lack of any knowledge of history. And the fact that he doesn't seem to understand that Russia is not our friend. We don't have to be at war with Russia, God forbid, even a cold war, but we have to understand that they have interests that differ widely from our own. And putting an oil man at the State Department is a shocking development. An oil man with huge Russian interests. I mean, but you know, that is just one of the myriad of potential conflicts of interest that we see daily unfolding as he assembles his cabinet. And I would urge people to read True Believer to get a sense of history, because as they say, if you don't know history, you're going to repeat it.
Exactly. Well, Kati, that's exactly what we want to do. Again, the name of the book, True Believer, Stalin's Last American Spy. There's no way we could cover all of this in a half an hour, but you did an excellent job of giving us all the more reason to pick up this book. Thank you so much today for joining us at Reader's Corner.
It was a pleasure, Bob.
I hope you enjoyed this encore edition of our interview with Kati Martin. Next week, Jane Mayer, author of Dark Money, The Hidden History of the Billionaires Behind the Rise of the Radical Right. Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. Research by Brady Moore. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner.